What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeats.com and save 15% with promo code DEAL.
Take that same recipe, maybe add beet powder to it and make banana beet pancakes to it, or put spirulina pop powder in it and blueberries and make blueberry spirulina pancakes, right? So I love how like customizable like a lot of these recipes are. You can really make it your own, but there are like just some recipes that like they just want like every week. I mean, both my baby and my toddler, and that's what I love about it. Like they'll both eat the same thing. So like you just deconstruct the pancakes into like pancake strips for the baby, and so they can both enjoy it.
You are here for a reason, but navigating this human life can be challenging. How do you care for your body, mind, and spirit to make the most of your time here on Earth? How can you harness your incredible human potential? In this podcast, we explore these questions and more to help you craft your best life yet. Welcome to I Am Human. Hello, beautiful humans. Welcome to another episode of I Am Human. I am your host, Dr. Yami, and I am so happy to be here with you today. I am so excited for you to hear this episode. It was just magical. I love my guest. I know you're going to love this episode, and I know for sure that you're going to take some nuggets from this episode. If you haven't already, if you could please subscribe to my channel or subscribe to the podcast, and then also rate and review, and please share episodes. If you know that there's episodes that would benefit people that you love, please share it with them. We would appreciate it so much if you help spread the word, and then just help spread all of this amazing information that could benefit other people and could literally save lives. So I really appreciate you doing that. To be human means to go along with the crowd, to be pressured into doing what everybody else is doing, to just follow your conditioning. But to be human also means to forge a different path, maybe even an uncomfortable path, but one that aligns with your values. And today's guest, she really just embodies that, not only in what she has done, is doing, but also what she hopes to do in the future. So my guest is Ashley Renee Nsanwu. She is a Black American and South Asian environmental advocate, vegan mom, and author of the Vegan Baby Cookbook and Guide. She shares daily vegan lifestyle inspiration for families, plant-based menu ideas for kids, and sustainable parenting tips. Ashley has been invited by the White House in 2022 and 2023 to meet the U.S. President and Vice President and cover climate events. She has made television appearances on CNN and Good Morning America, and her work has been highlighted in numerous magazines and online publications. Her brand, Hey Ashley Renee, inspires her community to bridge individual action with systemic change to help end animal exploitation, protect the environment, and make plant-based nutrition education accessible for parents and children in schools, especially in communities of color disproportionately impacted by climate change and health problems. In this episode, we talk about Ashley's beautiful book, the Vegan Baby Cookbook and Guide. I had the honor of helping her with the guide portion, the medical portion within the guide portion for some of the pediatric advice that she gives on there. So it's a wonderful book. It's a beautiful book. And we talk about her vegan plant-based journey, what it's been like raising vegan children and why she decided to write this book, what most people fear when they're considering raising and feeding a vegan child, the most common misconceptions that people have about vegan children and families. And I ask her the question point blank, is it unethical to raise children vegan? We also talk about if she has any fears or anxieties about her future kids' food choices and what she loves most about the book, what her kids' favorite recipes are, what she finds herself making over and over. And we also talk about some cooking fails that she's had, that she's been through. It wasn't really a cooking fail. It was more a toddler change that she was able to get through. But she has some really good advice and she used a really good strategy to get through it. So I know that you're going to learn a lot from that. So overall, this was just such a fantastic and plantastic episode. I know you're going to love it. Thank you so much for being here with me. I appreciate you so much. And now let's welcome Ashley Renee Insanwu.
The information on this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not meant to replace careful evaluation and treatment. If you have concerns about your health or well-being, please consult a healthcare professional.
Ashley Renee Insanwu, welcome to I Am Human.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I know we've connected a while back and we're finally actually connecting on the podcast. So I'm really excited.
I know. I feel like we're sisters, but also, you know what verifies that is we both wore yellow today.
Of course. So, yeah.
But then I noticed also there's a lot of those bright colors on the cover of your book too. So you must love bright colors just like me.
I do.
So I'm so excited to talk more about you and your journey and your book. That's just so beautiful and amazing. So let's start from the beginning.
Yes.
Tell us about your vegan plant-based journey. How did you get to where you are today?
So in 2015, I remember traveling to Bali and, you know, you have these like pristine ideas and images of Bali in your head. You're stepping on white sand beaches and it's beautiful and wonderful and awesome. And it was in like the touristy sections, right? But in the local areas, what I noticed was, you know, that same amount of money that was going into keeping the touristy areas nice and pristine wasn't going to the local areas, which is a form of environmental racism. But that was my introduction to sustainability because I just remember stepping on these piles and piles of trash everywhere on the beaches. And I was like, how is this reality? And I remember like asking my friend, like, what is going on? And she was like really into sustainability. And she was like, yeah, so like, think about it like this, like the plastic bottle that you throw away in America could end up in the ocean and travel all the way, you know, to the other side of the world to Bali's beach. And I was like, whoa, I never thought about it like that. And that's when I got into sustainability. Now, fast forward a year later, and I ended up seeing a video that just like really distraught me. And it was a video of a mother cow who had just given birth, and then somebody came to collect her baby cow, put the baby on the truck, and drove off. And the mother was just chasing after the truck, wailing. And that was the first time I'd ever like realized like the connection between, you know, animal suffering and like what we consume. And, you know, I was already at that point, I was like vegetarian, but I hadn't really thought about the inherent cruelty of like taking an animal, and even if you're not slaughtering the animal, you're still dictating what they're going to be doing for the rest of their life. You're going to be, in the case of cows, impregnating a cow, putting them through endless cycles of pregnancy, often forced pregnancy, making them give birth, taking away their baby so that they can continue to produce milk, just so that you can take the milk and then sell it for profit. And they never get to even enjoy motherhood. And it took seeing that video for me to get it. I didn't get it before. And then I saw it and I was like, oh, I just never thought about it. Like, animals are not ours to do this to, even if they're not being consumed as beef, right? Because I was thinking, what's wrong with dairy? But, you know, just the mere thought of an animal being kept in confinement for profit. It just didn't sit well with me. And so I went vegan and I never looked back. Now, fast forward a year after that, I watched a documentary called Cowspiracy, and I found out how the two are connected in terms of sustainability and animal agriculture. And so everything just came like together. So, you know, my sustainability journey, my vegan journey, it, you know, combined into one. And so, you know, I became an advocate for both, you know, environmentalism as well as, you know, animal advocacy. And then years later, I noticed the health impacts that, you know, was occurring with myself. I was like, oh my God, I noticed I'm just so much healthier. And so that's when I started learning about the nutrition aspect of it all. So I, you know, there are just so many layers to this. Like the further I go on my journey, I realize there are just so many layers to being vegan. And then of course, fast forward to 2020, got pregnant. And then now we add a whole other wrench into this whole journey. And I'm now a mom. And so now I'm having to learn how to raise a tiny human on a vegan lifestyle. And that's what eventually propelled me into publishing the Vegan Baby Cookbook and Guide. Because when I was sharing all of the information that I've been learning on my journey, all of the meals that I was cooking for my kids, people were so fascinated and they kept asking me, please, please, please put out a cookbook. And so I wrote one, and I didn't want to just write a cookbook. I needed it to be a guide as well. So it's like a two-part book. So in the first half, it's the guide, and the second half of the book are the recipes.
Okay, let's go back just because I'll make sure to be clear. So were you raised vegetarian, or did you make your own choice to go vegetarian? And how did that happen?
It was very random. So I had no idea what veganism was. Like literally, I just fell into that, you know, after I saw that video. But my journey to it, it wasn't like the end goal was to be vegan. It was just very random. Like it started out with, I think I read something about like red meat being bad for you. So I was like, I'm giving up all red meat. So I stopped eating red meat. Then I ended up somehow watching this Facebook video. You know how like videos just autoplay? You can't like press play. This one just autoplayed in my feed. It was like 5 seconds and there was nothing I could do about it. And it was just of somebody throwing a baby chick alive into a grinder. And my heart broke into 1,000 pieces. And I was like, I'm never eating a bird again. So I'm not only like stopping eating red meat, I'm also not going to eat turkey or chicken or any of that. I'm just going to be pescatarian. So I was pescatarian for a year. And I remember being in Peru. I was in Peru. And while I was in Peru, I just had this epiphany. And I was like, but fish have feelings too. They're also animals. Why am I not extending this grace towards fish? And I was in Peru with all this like amazing food. They had so many plant-based, you know, options and wonderful grains and vegetables and fruits. And it was just incredible, the food scene there. And I was like, I'm going to try being vegetarian while I'm here. And during that trip, I went vegetarian and I was like, I can do this. So I went vegetarian. And it was just like, I think maybe a month later that I accidentally ended up following a vegan. I don't even know how I ended up following this person, but that's when I saw the video of the cow. And I was like, oh, okay, vegetarian's not enough. I'm going vegan. And that's when it happened. Went vegan and never looked back.
It sounds like it was meant for you. Like this stuff just kept finding you no matter what.
For sure.
That's funny. Peru has amazing food and so many potatoes and like 50 million types of potatoes. So it's a great place if you're plant-based. You'll get plenty of sustenance there.
Sure.
I want to go back to something you said about the cows though, because my family in Panama are actually dairy farmers.
Yeah.
And I grew up every summer going to my grandparents and going to their farm. And, you know, they have their cows are graze on grass and, you know, it's like they're out in the nature and it's nice. But I remember even as a small child, because cows are just so beautiful. And it's almost like, I think as humans, we have this connection to cows because they're so calm and they have these big, beautiful eyes. And I remember, you know, I would walk and I would go look at them and I'd be like, having like this ethical debate in my head, like, is this a right thing to do? Like, we're literally stealing their milk.
Yeah.
But then the other part of my brain would be like, yeah, but you have to. Like, there's no other choice. Like, we have to drink milk. Humans have to drink milk, right? Yeah. And my family drinks milk and everybody drinks milk. So I guess this is just something we have to do. And I remember just looking at their eyes and almost feeling like, bad, like, oh, I'm so sorry I have to do this for you. But it's just a thing. Like, we have to do this. Yeah. But then it took like till I was in my 30s after waking up from all the brainwashing to be like, oh, actually, no, we don't need to drink milk. And in fact, not only do we not need to drink milk, it actually causes us a lot of problems.
It does.
For our health.
Yeah.
So that's finally when my brain was like, okay, the cognitive dissonance was gone. And then I was able to easily become vegan because I feel like it was one of those things that for me, I was like you, like little things kept happening, but I had that cognitive dissonance of like, no, I was taught you have to have milk. And if you're not eating meat, you're going to get deficiencies and bad things are going to happen to you, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that was that big conflict. So I think more people would probably embrace plant-based eating if they knew that not only is it healthy, but you can thrive this way.
Right.
And like you knew, like, hey, there's a lot of cruelty in the dairy industry. There's a lot of things that happen that people have no clue. Like you just see these little milk cartons with like a happy cow in the hills and you're like, oh, it's fine. They're all happy. They love giving up their milk. It's their, you know, it's what they do for fun, you know?
And so, to your point, the conditioning starts early when you're a child and you see these happy images of cows. You learn it in the songs. Old MacDonald had a farm, but no, Old MacDonald had a farm. Yeah, sure. But they weren't happy cows on the farm. You know, they're, you don't know what the cows actually go through on those farms. But they're not showing you that. They're talking about it and singing about it and presenting these cows as if they're happy when that's far from the truth. And so kids grow up thinking this. And then if you also think about it, like you look at what we feed kids, like, okay, chicken nuggets, for example, they look nothing like a chicken. They have no idea that that's what they're eating. So they're just so far removed from the actual animal that it originated as. You know, all they see is the food and the product that's in front of their face. And they're not actually making the connection that they're eating or drinking the secretions of an animal. They're not like really grasping that concept.
And young children automatically feel like it's not right.
Oh, yeah.
Like if they knew, they wouldn't be comfortable with it, but they don't know. Because of course, we wouldn't tell them because we don't want to be uncomfortable. We wouldn't want it to get awkward. And we're also, a lot of parents are afraid. If our kids don't eat, quote, protein, bad things are going to happen. So
And don't forget the calcium and the vitamin D. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Before I talk to you about raising vegan children, I have to ask a very serious question.
Yes.
Will you adopt me? Because literally seeing your child eat food, I'm like, oh my God, the joy. Like, please feed me like that. Like, I just want that food, sit next to him. I can have siblings. I grew up an only child. So if you're looking for an extra child that's 44 years old, let me know.
I'm going to have to buy a palace to accommodate all of the people who ask me to adopt them. You're not the only one.
I love it.
I can't.
Okay. So tell me, what has it been like raising vegan children?
Yeah.
And have you gone through a period of doubting and wondering, is this the right thing? Did you go through that or not?
You know what? I actually did not. I'm the type of person where when I know something is right, like I just go through with it like head first. I mean, I dove into all of this, especially when I got pregnant. I took courses. I learned everything I could about nutrition because it's one thing to be vegan as an adult and you're responsible for yourself. It's another to be responsible for raising a whole other human being like that. Type of pressure is like way different. So I had to make sure that I knew exactly what I was doing. So before I knew what I was doing, even though, you know, there was like that pressure of like, okay, I got to figure this out. There was no doubt in my mind that this was the right thing to do. Cause I was like, I know it's possible. I just had to do the research to understand like how to do it properly. Right. Because kids, you know, have different nutrient requirements than adults. Like if you look at any like, you know, nutrient chart, they'll be broken out into like ages, like what a 6 month old needs versus like say 1 to 3 versus say, I don't know, 3 to 7, so on and so forth, just as an example. So I had to get familiar with like all those nutrient requirements and, you know, what their unique needs were. And so I did that. I did all the research. I, you know, bought the books. I looked at dietitians. I eventually found a plant-based pediatrician. So I did all my due diligence to make sure that I was doing this properly. So never during this journey did I, you know, question whether or not this was the right thing to do. Knew this was the right thing to do. Just had to make sure that I was doing it correctly. And so I want to like emphasize this to people, like when you arm yourself with the information and you surround yourself with the community and you reach out to the experts and make sure that you're following all the right people, you're not going to waver in your choice because you're going to build the confidence that you're doing this correctly. Unfortunately, a lot of vegan families I find are very like scared to talk about this stuff because of the backlash that people often get from raising a vegan family. But of course, you have to remind yourself that that is all stemming from ignorance and a lack of information on other people's parts, not on your part. As long as you remain confident and you remain competent, then you will remain confident. So, you know, competence breeds confidence. So, you know, as long as you do the research, you do the work, you build up that confidence, you will be fine. And, you know, you'll be confident, you know, all throughout your journey in terms of raising a vegan family.
Well, you have just such a beautiful presence online and your children are beautiful and all of the food that you create and, you know, all of the joy. But I'm sure you've gotten your fair share of exposure to fear and doubt. So what would you say most people fear when they're considering raising and feeding a vegan child? What are the things that you're hearing from your audience?
Oh gosh, the number one question that I get is what supplements do you give, you know, your vegan child? And I totally understand that, right? Because the one thing that we like don't really learn growing up are, you know, our nutritional requirements. And so we kind of grow up with this false sense of security, thinking that as long as I'm drinking my milk and I'm eating my meat and I'm eating all my animal products, I'm getting everything that I need. So I don't even need to question it. So that's what's so funny to me is for the folks who are always against what I'm doing, they themselves don't even know what nutritional requirements are. They themselves don't even realize that they are actually supplementing and don't even realize it, right? Like people like to make fun of vegans for supplementing, but I'm like, you do realize that manufacturers supplement milk with vitamin D. So technically you're supplementing as well because cow's milk doesn't naturally have vitamin D. Naturally has calcium, but it does not naturally have vitamin D. So the number one question that I get from people who are actually interested in learning and genuinely want to know, you know, how to do this right for themselves is what supplements are you taking? And I totally understand why people would ask that question based on, you know, what I just said. We don't learn these things growing up. And so I let them know like, hey, there are, you know, a few key nutrients that you do need to, you know, pay attention to, like B12, of course, which pretty much all vegans know about. Not every single person is aware, but most are aware at this point that you need to take a vitamin B12 supplement, you know, as the most reliable way to get your B12. And of course, there's also fortified options as well, but the most reliable source for a child, the easiest way to make sure that your child is getting enough vitamin B12 is through a supplement. And then, you know, there are just other little nutrients here and there to just pay attention to, like vitamin D. Surprisingly, a lot of people don't know that babies, no matter whether you're vegan or not, are encouraged to take a vitamin D supplement from birth through their first year of age. So like little, you know, things like that. And I just tell people like, hey, this is what we're doing. These are the supplements that we're taking. And, you know, if you want, you can do the same. But just know that no matter what, I need you to understand that this is possible. You can do this. Your child will not be nutrient deficient. I promise you all those fears that you have that have been just ingrained into you by the media, by, you know, naysayers, by people who don't know anything about nutrition. They don't know what they're talking about. You just have to know the correct amounts, what their nutritional needs are, and, you know, make sure that they're getting a variety of fruits, vegetables, grains, nuts, seeds, legumes, all the things, and your child will be fine, I promise.
What do you feel are the most common misconceptions that people have about raising vegan children?
That they're all nutrient deficient. That their growth is going to be stunted. They're not going to reach their proper height. Their weight's going to be compromised. All they eat is carbs and sugar. I mean, the list goes on. The boys are going to turn into girls from all the soy that they're eating. And I'm like, what? I mean, I get the most bizarre comments. I mean, even like Beyond, he has a lot of hair. So I've gotten a comment like, yeah, it's from all the soy that he's consuming. He's like so feminine. Like, why are you saying this about a 2-year-old? And he's now 3. Like, you are wild. Like, you're a whole adult talking about a child like this. I mean, I get the wildest comments sometimes. But yeah, I think some of the biggest misconceptions are that, you know, it's unhealthy. You're robbing them of their choice. You're forcing this on them, which is very ironic to me, because isn't the same concept applied to forcing a child to eat animals? I mean, you could say the same thing. You know, we as parents, we all make choices for our kids. Yeah. So those are like the top misconceptions, I would say, that it's forceful. You're stunting their height. You're, you know, disrupting their growth. They're not getting all of their nutrients. It's child abuse. And that the soy is somehow going to affect my boys and, you know, turn them into girls somehow.
I love that people thought that this beautiful, luxurious hair had to do with soy, because I have very fine hair. It's like a genetic trait, okay? Like, I have very little hair. I'm like a hairless cat. My hair looks like it'll have a lot because it's curly, but yeah. It's not very thick. It's very fine. Mm-hmm. I eat a lot of soy. It has not made my hair thicker, okay, everybody? Right. Also, my bra size has not gone up. So
right. I would love
for anybody that's...
No.
It doesn't work that way.
I can confirm only getting pregnant and breastfeeding changed the size of my chest. And once I yes. finished, it did. It went back. So
yep.
no, it had
yep.
nothing to do with soy.
Okay. So I want to pose this to you. Is it unethical to raise a child vegan?
No, it's not unethical to raise a child vegan. It's, you know, and I find it so interesting because people, they're so biased sometimes. They don't even realize it when they hear the word vegan. First of all, I would like people to just stop hearing the word vegan and thinking whatever you're thinking. Like, just replace the word vegan with people who don't want animals to die. How about that? Will that make it better? Will that make it more understandable for you? Will it make it, you know, more palatable if you think about it that way? Like, oh, they're pacifists. They just don't want animals to die. Like, it's interesting how people are against animal cruelty. Like, for example, what do you call it? Yeah. The no animal testing. I forgot what they actually call it on the label, but so people, they don't want animal testing. They're all against animal testing, right? But the moment you say the word vegan, they're like, oh, like, I don't care if it's vegan, but animal testing, like, I'm against that. Yeah. Like, I don't want cruelty to animals. No way. No way. No how. No cruelty to animals. But is it consuming them also cruel? Is it utilizing their body parts for, you know, a profit? Isn't that animal cruelty? So people have just these very specific definitions of these terms, like animal cruelty, without thinking about the cruel aspect of actually like eating an animal and consuming an animal. It's very interesting to me how we can like separate the two. So no, I don't think it's a child abuse or, you know, cruel to raise a kid vegan. You're literally raising a child to be compassionate and empathetic and to love not only animals, but their own health, other people, the environment. Like I said earlier in the podcast, like, there are so many layers to this that people don't even think about. I actually just saw the screening of Christspiracy, and they were talking about all these other different layers, like, you know, the like prisoners who are used in animal agriculture, immigrants who are used in animal agriculture, and just the insane like mental impacts that having to work in these slaughterhouses, the mental impacts that this has on the poor people who are pretty much being forced to do this labor. I mean, there was actually, an investigation that showed that there were kids who were working in these slaughterhouses, these dangerous slaughterhouses, where they were sustaining injuries to themselves. I think one child actually died. I saw that in the news, from working in a slaughterhouse, right? So of course, there are so many different layers to being vegan, and so many benefits to raising a child vegan. And honestly, I have so much faith in Gen Alpha. I feel like this generation is going to be like our biggest hope so far. Like, you have so many millennial parents and Gen X parents, soon to be Gen Z parents, you know, raising these newer generations of kids. And I feel like it's going to be a generation of like compassionate children, the most compassionate generation that we've seen, you know, in our lifetime. So I'm excited to see what happens. I mean, you're starting to see more and more like articles where they're saying, oh, more and more, you know, parents are choosing to like raise their kids on plant-based diets. You know, we need to get ahead of this. Like, I just saw an article about that the other day, like, oh, we need to like caution people against, you know, raising kids on plant-based diets, or like at least, you know, help them build a framework to do it correctly. So people are like starting to like panic, right? Because, you know, at least here in the United States, there aren't guidelines that are as well put into place as there are in like other countries. Like, when I was doing all my research for my book, I drew a lot of like information from other countries who put together these fantastic like guidelines for raising vegan kids. But it's like the United States just hasn't caught up to that yet. So yeah, people are like starting to panic in the US because they're realizing and they're recognizing that the rates of people choosing to raise their kids vegan are starting to grow, and they have not put any guidelines into place to help parents do it. But it's cool because there's a whole community of people out there who have that information ready. There are plant-based pediatricians like you who are providing, you know, this information that people need. There are people who've written books. There are people who have courses. There are people who have like all these tools and resources out there for parents. We just need the government to catch up in terms of making guidelines that, you know, the greater masses of people can start to follow.
But you, of all people, probably understand how difficult that is in our country.
Yeah.
Because of industry influence. Oh. And because of how it benefits them to not have people feel comfortable with that option. They want people to feel uncomfortable. They want people to feel doubtful that that's an option, because it's going to mean less money in their pockets. And so that's why it's really hard, is because these industries are embedded within our government.
Yeah.
So there's a conflict of interest. You referred to earlier as, would people be more comfortable as if we just called ourselves people that didn't want animals to die? I honestly don't think so, because,
yeah, <you're right.
laughs> because it creates cognitive dissonance.
Yeah. You're right.
They're thinking, okay, if you don't want animals to die, but I'm eating animals, does that mean I want animals to die?
Yeah.
No, I have to eat animals. No, this is right. This is the right thing to do. We all eat animals. This is how everybody's done it. God wants us to eat animals. And so then you start having these justifications because it's so uncomfortable, because you make the assumption that if someone's vegan, they're automatically judging you. So, right, there's like all these defense mechanisms coming up. And so it's a very loaded topic that it's going to take us a while to get through. But you're right. This generation coming up, they're different. Both of my sons, I've raised vegan, plant-based. My older son is a freshman in college, and all of his presentations so far that he's done have all been over some topic of veganism. So
wow.
Everything he's done, it's all over some kind of vegan topic.
Yeah.
He did one about environmental racism with animal agriculture. And then of course, like the health benefits, one of the projects he did. And one of the lines of the cafeteria at his school is all plant-based.
Wow.
And like, it's amazing. I was afraid he wasn't going to miss my cooking and want to come home. Thankfully, he still wants to come home, but he sends me pictures of what he gets to eat at school. And it's amazing.
Wow.
Like, have all kinds of tofu and jackfruit and all kinds of things. So yeah, things are changing. They're changing as we speak.
Yeah.
So there is hope for the future.
Yeah, we just need the school systems to all implement that so everyone can be on board.
Well, and New York is, you know, leading the way in that. They're forging the path for us and the rest of the country. They're doing amazing work in New York City.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about mommy anxiety. Do you have any at all? So do you have any fears?
Yeah.
Do you do like the rest of us moms where we project 20 years into the future and worry about what our kids are going to be eating then? Do you ever think about that?
Yeah.
What have you thought about that? Because that happens to a lot of parents. They start raising their kids plant-based, like, what if they change their mind? What are they going to do when they experiment? I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
People have actually posed that question to me, like, what are you going to do if your kid asks to eat meat? I'm like, we'll cross that bridge if we get to it. There's no sense in worrying about it now. So I'm very much like, I hate the feeling of anxiety. So I do everything that I can to not feel that way by just saying, let's live in the moment. I know right now, this is what I can control. All I can do is my best to, you know, build that foundation and hope that they stick to it. I think what I have going for me is because I have this community, I'm surrounded by other parents who have done this, people who have older kids who tell me like, yeah, my kid's been vegan for 20 years or 18 years or 16 years. And so I hear all these positive stories of parents who raised their kids vegan and they never strayed. And so I've like just held on to that hope, like that's going to be my story too. And I'm like, it just has to be this way. Like I just need for it to be this way. So I try not to even put that pressure and that anxiety on myself. And I just try to always think positive and just focus on what I can control as a mom. And what I can control as a mom is, you know, just like reinforcing this, modeling it, you know, explaining everything to my kids. Like I'm definitely one of those parents where I talk to my kids about everything. Yes, he's three. I don't look at him as like, oh, he's just like this little toddler. He won't understand anything. No, like I talk to him. I explain to him about animals. I read books to him about, you know, animal agriculture. One of his favorite books, actually, he's been asking me this to read it to him every single night. It's Happy Animals, Friends, Not Food. That is his favorite book right now. And he's always like, animals are friends, not food. So you can absolutely start talking to, you know, your kids as early as you want. I mean, I had a book called Not My Mama's Milk. Like that's something that you can read to babies, you know, 1-year-old, 2-year-old. You can start building that foundation in them. So, you know, do I ever think about it? Yes, of course. It would be weird not to. But do I let it get to me? No, because all I can do is focus on what I can do right now. And plus, I think the idea of even thinking about my kids, like in the future, that in it alone will give me anxiety because I'm like, I love this stage right now. Like, gosh, you're just so cute. Like, I know we have to just like love and appreciate every stage. But you know, when you're in it, it's like you just don't want to leave it, especially when you finally like feel like you're in control and you're like, yeah, I got the hang of this. I'm doing great. But then all of a sudden it changes and you got to like adapt again. So it's like, I like where we are right now. I don't want to think about the future. So don't even like make me go there. So yeah, we're good right now where we are. You know, we'll cross that bridge if we ever get to it. And I hope I don't.
Yeah. I love that. I love your approach to life. I love your attitude. It's beautiful. And I 100% agree. I mean, I do get into my anxiety. I don't get anxious about that anymore, especially now that I have a child that's in college and has shown that that foundation is so important. And myself, like you, as a physician and lifestyle medicine physician, I've been talking to them about this stuff for, you know, ever now, almost 13 years. It'll be 13 years this summer that we've been plant-based vegan. So they know the health benefits, they know the environmental benefits, they know the animal benefits, they know all the things.
Good.
And they can give their own presentations now, which is nice.
Yeah.
So I think if you set that foundation, even if they need to go off and do their thing, you know, for a little bit, I think that they come back because they have that internal knowledge of what it feels like, of, you know, it aligns with their values. So I don't think that there's any fear there, especially when you set a good foundation.
Hey, humans, I know you want to eat healthier, but feel strapped for time. And even the thought of meal planning and cooking stresses you out. Well, have you considered trying a meal kit service? Green Chef is the number one meal kit for eating well, delivering pre-portioned and prepped quality whole foods with limited processed ingredients. Green Chef sends organic, fresh produce, and chef-designed recipes in every box for satisfying, nourishing, and convenient meals that make it easy to stick to a healthy living routine. Find recipes for every lifestyle, including plant-based diets. Green Chef delivers quality whole foods with limited processed ingredients, including low added sugar and sodium smart options. You get to choose from 80 plus flavor packed options that allow you to take back time in your kitchen with dinner ready in 30 minutes and lunch in 10. Try 15 plus new recipes every week. But here's the best part. Green Chef delivers everything you need to make convenient, wholesome, and delicious meals directly to your doorstep. Each meal kit includes pre-measured ingredients, as well as some produce that comes already pre-chopped and custom sauces that are pre-made in-house. They also provide their recipe cards, and the meals are really simple to make. It's a delicious, fresh, home-cooked meal without the hassle. What I love the most about Green Chef is that it takes the stress out of cooking. The recipes are easy to follow and everything you need is included, so even the less experienced cooks in your house can make a delicious home-cooked meal. It's perfect for those seasons in your life that you're really busy with your kids' sports and school events. Hello, spring! And time is limited, especially if you want fresh, home-cooked, healthy meals to put on the table. So if you're feeling frustrated by the lack of time to eat healthy and you are ready to try Green Chef and see how easily you can integrate it into your healthy lifestyle, go to greenchef.com/IAMHUMAN50 and use code IAMHUMAN50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. That's greenchef.com/IAMHUMAN50 and use the code IAMHUMAN50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well.
Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with products intended to bring your mind and body back in harmony. They consider themselves a by women and for women company, and they now offer a nutrient-dense green powder called Daily Nutrigreens. Myself and my staff here at Nourish Wellness all tried the Daily Nutrigreens and we loved it. The Daily Nutrigreens contain an immune antioxidant and detox blend along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. It also contains other important nutrients such as B12, iron, zinc, and selenium. The Daily Greens are certified organic and all you have to do is mix it with water, but you can also easily add to your smoothies, your oatmeal, or your baked goods. The Daily Nutrigreens are vegan, gluten-free, and non-GMO. And another bonus is that the packaging is compostable. Yay! When I tried the apple banana Daily Nutrigreens, I was surprised by the pleasant and mild flavor. It was easy to prepare and drink and didn't leave any aftertaste. And I felt great afterwards. It's really easy to create a daily ritual around your green drink. Integrate it into your daily self-care routine. A green powder is one way to fill the gap in daily nutrition and is an easy and convenient way to get in your greens. These powders are a great way to add more nutrients into your diet during busy times, travel, and transitions in life when you don't have time or access to fresh green veggies. If you're interested in trying Equilibria's Daily Nutrigreens, head to myeq.com and use code Dr. Yami, that's DRYAMI, for 15% off Equilibria's Daily Nutrigreens and much more. That's myeq.com and use code Dr. Yami, DRYAMI, at checkout for 15% off site-wide today.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code STAPLE20.
Okay, so such a beautiful book. I want to talk about your book for a little bit. Besides the pictures of your beautiful children, which I can't get enough, just scrumptious, what's your favorite part about this book? What do you love about it?
The guide, hands down. I know that would surprise people. Like people actually thought I was just writing a cookbook, a recipe book. But the most important part of the book to me was the guide, because that's where you see so much of like my personal life intertwined with like what I was writing, you know, in the very beginning. Like I shared just like little tidbits of information, like how the first time my friends met my baby, Beyond, who's like, he's three now, but the first time they met him, I took him to a party and one of my friend's husbands said, "That ain't no vegan baby." And he turned to my husband. He was like, "I know you're slipping him some meat when Ashley's not looking." You know, my husband was just like, "No, we're not, he's vegan. Like, what's so hard to believe about that?" But, you know, going back to common misconceptions, right? People expect for, you know, vegan children to be malnourished, underweight, yada, yada, yada. Whatever you picture, you know, a vegan baby to look like. He didn't meet those expectations of what they were expecting. So, you know, like just like little aspects, my personal touches of, you know, my life and my stories, a lot of that was intertwined into the guide part. And then obviously just like working on the nutrition chapter, it was just so important to me because I just wanted to make sure that parents had the information like, okay, it's not just about the recipes. Like, I want y'all to understand the nutritional component to this, you know, how to do this properly. And to you, I'm so grateful that you reviewed that chapter. You gave your credibility to it. You offered your knowledge, your insights, your edits to my chapter to make sure that parents had the most accurate information that they could to make sure that they were doing this, you know, the right way, and to make sure that they felt confident in what they were doing. Because honestly, one of the biggest fears that parents have is, am I causing my child to be nutrient deficient if I do this? And I just wanted parents to know, like, no, you're not. Here are all the nutritional needs. As you can see, plants provide, you know, all these things, right? So the guide was just very important to me. You know, everything from sharing, you know, our meal prep strategy to the plant-based juniors PB3 plate method, which, you know, shows how to structure a plate and to show that it doesn't even have to be like a perfectly like, you know, divided plate of three things, right? Like you could have a bowl of a veggie bowl and have, you know, all the different categories all mixed into that veggie bowl. And to like, just like really show people like how to do it versus just coming up with a bunch of recipes and saying, all right, you're on your own, like go cook these, you know? So that guide part was honestly just near and dear to my heart. I spent the most time on it. Well, actually, I don't know. I feel like the recipes section was actually quite intensive when it came to like cooking the recipes and photographing the recipes. That was very labor intensive. And I did that in my third trimester of pregnancy. So I don't want to make it sound like there was no labor involved. There was a lot of labor involved in the recipe section. But just something about that first part, the guide, just was near and dear to my heart because I just felt like it gave families so much practical information on like how to do how to approach the lifestyle aspect of veganism versus just the recipes part. The cooking is just one component. It's how do you make this sustainable for your whole family? Like, how do you make this work? And I feel like that part of the book is what gave people the compass towards doing this and doing it sustainably.
I agree. I think the what is definitely important, but the how is what you really need to get going to feel like, okay, I'm going to try it and I'm going to do trial and error and we're going to be okay. But yeah, what an honor it was. So thank you for asking me to review that section. You did a fabulous job. I barely had to make any edits, just little tiny little things, but it's wonderful because I do want parents to feel more confident. This is the way. This is the future. We're all headed this way, whether we want to be or not. And we need to develop a healthier foundation for our children. Currently, children are deriving 70% of their calories from ultra-processed foods here in the United States. Ooh. And it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. We just need to learn a little stuff. It doesn't have to be that difficult. Yeah. Even though I will say that your children look like they eat gourmet. So that's why we all want to be your children. So speaking of that, what are your kids' favorite recipes and what do you find yourself making over and over?
Oh, just every variation of those pancakes. So I have banana oat pancakes, right? You can literally just take that, a lot of the recipes, right? You can just take that recipe and just remix it any way you want. So the banana oat pancakes recipe in my cookbook, you know, I'll like make batches of that like every week, but like just switch it up. So it's like, take that same recipe, maybe add beet powder to it and make banana beet pancakes to it, or put spirulina pop powder in it and blueberries and make blueberry spirulina pancakes, right? So I love how like customizable like a lot of these recipes are. You can really make it your own, but there are like just some recipes that like they just want like every week. I mean, both my baby and my toddler, and that's what I love about it. Like they'll both eat the same thing. So like you just deconstruct the pancakes into like pancake strips for the baby, and so they can both enjoy it, right? So yeah, the pancakes, definitely a hit. Scrambled tofu, always a hit. Chia pudding, actually chia yogurt, always a hit with both of them. Oh, breakfast cookies, my Beyond love those. Brownies, like what's really cool about it is like, especially for parents, you know, are going through that stage where kids just love to like snack. Like maybe it's like really hard to get them to eat, let's say, soup or like a meal that looks like, you know, this dish that you work so hard on, but they'll eat snacks, right? Well, that's the beauty of like making your own snacks. You can put all those like nutritional aspects that maybe you would put into like this beautiful gourmet meal into that snack. And they're getting all of like those nutrients that you want them to eat, but it's in snack form, because sometimes like that's what looks good to a kid. And it's just so easy for them to pick up and, you know, eat. And it's really interesting too. Like sometimes like if you just present a vegetable or a fruit in various different ways, they might not like it one way, but they'll like it a different way. So it's like, it's just, you know, a matter of experimenting. So yeah, all these different recipes, you know, it's just a matter of like presenting it in a way that's palatable to them. And I find that a lot of those like snackable type dishes tend to be like their favorites because they're just so easy to like eat. And you know, a child's job is to be a child and play. And so I think I read that in your book, maybe, that you were saying that like, you know, don't panic if they don't want to eat. Like their job is to be a toddler and to have fun. They are masters of having fun. Like that is what they do. So you try to get them to eat, you're interrupting their fun. They want to get back to the games, their cars, their toys, their whatever they were doing. So, you know, you hand them a snack, that's easy for them to just eat and then go back to doing their job, which is to be a kid and have fun.
Exactly. They're not down for like 2-hour candlelit dinners. No. You know, they're hungry. They want to satiate their hunger and go back to their ultimate fun job, which is to explore their environment and play and learn. So yeah, I love that you can make these things handheld, but whenever you make your own, you can put all of those wonderful nutrients in there, the fiber, the antioxidants, you put legumes and so many things. I mean, there's just so many benefits to that rather than buying these ultra processed foods that don't have all of that powerful nutrition in them. Okay. I would love to know, have you had any big cooking fails in the last few years or things that you've made that you're like super excited about and give to your kids and they're like, ugh, I don't like that?
Well, first of all, here's the funny part. I actually hated cooking until I started cooking for my kids. So I didn't get into cooking until I started cooking for my kids. So people are always surprised to find that like I never actually enjoyed cooking. In fact, I made it a requirement when I was like dating, when I was looking for people, like you have to know how to cook because I'm not doing it for you. So my dad did all the cooking growing up. So I grew up thinking that men were supposed to be in the kitchen and they were supposed to do all the cooking for their wives because he did all the cooking for, you know, me and my sister and my mom. So I grew up thinking that. So that was like always my requirement, like y'all got to know how to cook. And so I actually ended up marrying someone who loved to cook. So now fast forward to, you know, now I'm a mom and I actually love cooking only because my kids love the food. So it makes it enjoyable. So it makes me want to do it more. But then, you know, I got pregnant and my husband started doing a lot of the cooking to alleviate the pressure from me because I couldn't stand the sight of food. For some reason, my second pregnancy was very different from my first. Like, my first trimester, like I didn't want to see food, like, oh, it just made me nauseous just to look at it. So my husband took over the cooking and he chose the easy route. He was like, I'm going to give you oatmeal every day for dinner. So Beyond got used to that. And so by the time, like, you know, I was back into my second trimester, I was feeling good. I was ready to start cooking for my kid again. And he's like, I want oatmeal every night. Oatmeal. I want oatmeal. That's what I want. And I'm like, who are you? Like, what have you done with my child who would eat anything? And so it was so funny because I remember when I first started, you know, posting all these videos and people would be like, yeah, my kid just won't eat. And I was thinking, oh yeah, Beyond's not going to be like that. Like he's not a selective eater. He eats everything. And so when I went through that, my mind was just like blown. I was like, how is this happening to me? Like, why do you just want oatmeal every night for dinner? Like, I love cooking all this like different variety for you. But here's how I got out of it. And actually, like, these are how some of the recipes got into my cookbook. So I started out by taking that oatmeal and cooking it different ways. So that plain oatmeal that my husband would make, you know, all the time, I would start out by doing like maybe apple pie oatmeal one day, or, you know, like banana cinnamon oatmeal another day. So I started getting him like accustomed again to being open to trying different flavors and new things. And then instead of doing oatmeal, I would find something that had a similar texture to oatmeal. And that's how I came up with the coconut quinoa porridge recipe that's in my cookbook. So I gave him the coconut quinoa porridge recipe and he was like, this is great. So now we're introducing a different type of food, quinoa. And so like slowly got him out of like that oatmeal slump. But absolutely, I went through a selective eating phase with him where like all those gourmet looking meals, he was rejecting them all. He just wanted his oatmeal and like he would be good to go. Probably because it was just so easy to eat and then he could go back to being a toddler and playing. So, but eventually I got him out of it. So
I love it. Well, you know, oatmeal is not bad. I feel like oatmeal at least is better than what most children are, which is the mac and cheese and chicken nugget diet.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, most kids are going to go through some of that no matter what you do. It's just like literally part of how their brain works. So I want all moms out there to know that, I mean, you feel like you're doing a good job. Great. Keep doing a good job. But just know that no matter what you do, a lot of kids, they're going to go through it.
Because
that's what the studies show. But it is true that they will learn to like what they're given. So as much as we can, just like you did, you had to push yourself out of your comfort zone and be like, okay, I don't like it that he only wants to eat oatmeal, but how can I start changing this up within his preferences so that I can start getting him acclimated again to variety? And variety is so important for our gut microbiome. So we want to get that different kinds of fibers in there. And we just want to keep those, you know, taste buds and that brain, the neuroplasticity receptive to variety, because it's just really good for our health. So good job, mama.
Thank you. I'm glad
you put that hard work in. I know that was probably frustrating, but you did it.
Thank you.
Okay. That was wonderful. Now I want to get into some of these deeper questions. Yes. What do you wish more people knew?
I wish more people knew about just how much of our choices are not actually dictated by science, by health. A lot of our choices are not informed by, you know, education. A lot of it is dictated by marketing and by politics. And I need people to understand that. I need people to start looking past the marketing and recognize when they're just being sold to at the expense of their own health. It's all around us. I mean, just look at how some of the most unhealthy foods are specifically marketed towards kids using bright colors and fun packaging to get them excited about it so that their parents will buy it for them. It's all marketing. I even wrote in my book about how, you know, people say like baby-led weaning, right? Which is, you know, feeding your child, like, you know, not instead of puree foods, you're feeding them just like regular table foods. And, you know, that was, they say like, it's a new thing that people are doing, but it was actually an older practice. So they call like puree foods the traditional practice of like feeding kids. But actually that wasn't always the tradition. What happened was marketing. It was the Gerber family. They came out with canned baby food at some point in the, I think, 20th century. And it really caught on. And people were like, oh, this is really cool. Because people used to just like give kids like table foods and like whatever they were eating, they would feed their kids. And then when a new product came out and it was all the buzz, and, you know, Gerber spent all this money like trying to tell doctors to convince their patients that this was healthier than homemade, you know, baby food. And so that's kind of like one thing that kind of influenced a shift in the way we feed babies. So we have to learn to look past marketing. Like, if we are feeding kids based on what corporations are telling us is best for our kids, we have to question it, because they have something to gain from that. They are trying to get our money, right? So you have to look past that and really do your own research and make sure that you are making informed choices when it comes to feeding your children, and don't get caught up in, you know, the marketing hype of companies and what they're trying to sell you. And you also have to understand, you know, what Dr. Yami was saying earlier about, you know, these corporations being in the government's pockets. You know, lobbying is a thing. I've always called it legal bribery, but, you know, these corporations are using money to influence the legislation that is being passed to tell you what the nutritional guidelines are for your children. I mean, the fact that we're still forcing kids to drink cow's milk in schools is beyond me. But, you know, the dairy industry has a lot of money and they have major connections with the government. So we have to learn to look past all those things and do our own research and make sure that we are making informed choices.
What an amazing, important message. Thank you for that. How do you define success in this lifetime?
Certainly not what was taught to me in America. You know, the whole American dream. I actually always joke like the new American dream is to leave America. So like, I feel like success has been just like ingrained in us. The definition of it has been taught to us that it should be like based on our career, based on how much money we have. Like, it's all like these superficial things. And it took a long time for me to realize that success has nothing to do with how much money I have, has nothing to do with where I am in my career, whether or not I, you know, start a $1 million business, whether or not I get a TV show, I land that deal that I've always wanted. It's about how much joy I have inside of me. Like, when you are in a place where no matter where you are, like, you can just meet yourself where you're at and find joy in where you are, you've made it. Like, you are successful, because that is a beautiful feeling to have. Like, I just wake up with so much joy in my heart every day because I am just grateful for what I have now. I feel like we are just conditioned by our society to always be wanting that next thing and never be satisfied until we get that next thing. Always be trying to climb the corporate ladder. Always be trying to, you know, try to get to that next step. But what about just enjoying where you are in the moment and just embracing that and congratulating yourself for making it that far? Because, like, I guarantee you, wherever you are in life now, maybe not for everybody, but for a lot of people, maybe you 10 years ago would have loved to have been there, right? So you 10 years ago is probably so proud of where you are now. So stop trying to think so far out into the future of like where you want to be and take a moment to just enjoy where you are and where you've made it so far. And I feel like that's how I wake up just every day, just filled with so much joy. I try to instill that in my kids to just be present, enjoy the moment, be filled with joy. That is the definition of success to me. How happy are you right now? If you are happy right now, if you have joy in your heart, if you aren't constantly thinking about the next step, you are good. You are golden. You have succeeded in life.
Wow. That's amazing. It seems like the ultimate gift that just keeps on giving. I'm wondering, where did you learn that?
I feel like just a series of lessons have like gotten me here. But I will say there was this one thing that in particular that I will never forget. I was working on a project. It was some kind of influencer project where I was covering this like super eco-friendly sporting event. But I was there with several other sustainability content creators. And somebody was just telling me the story. I don't know if it was Burt's Bees. It was some company that came about by basically taking somebody else's idea. You know, it might've been Burt's Bees. I can't remember. I don't want to say that just in case it wasn't Burt's Bees. But they were telling me the story about how, you know, this person came across this guy who was like making, you know, this product, and it was just like so amazing. And then they took that idea and then, you know, turned it into like this very profitable business. But the guy who originally had the idea, who was doing it on the side of the road or whatever, you know, never made a dime off of it, was never a part of it. And I just remember saying, God, that's so unfair. Like, why is it always like the people who like, you know, take ideas and they end up becoming successful and they end up making so much money, while the person who like originally had the idea, they're just like left in the dust? And they were like, but why are you looking at it like that? Maybe he didn't want that life. And I was like, gosh, you're right. You know, like, maybe his definition of happiness and joy was not building this multi-million or billion-dollar company and being beholden to this big business that he created that he has to keep running and making sure that it's successful. And you're basically a slave to your investors. And, you know, maybe he didn't want that. He maybe didn't want that. Maybe his definition of happiness was continuing to do what he was doing by himself on the side of the road for the rest of his life because it made him happy doing just that. And he didn't have to deal with, you know, all the hardships that come with being like a millionaire, a billionaire, whatever, owning a business. Maybe that simple life was joy to him. And ever since like they said that to me, I have completely rethought, you know, like success. And I recognize that, you know, living a quote unquote simple life doesn't mean that you're not successful. As long as it's a joyful life to you, that's all that matters. And honestly, in this capitalistic society that we live in, I actually sometimes fantasize about like, what would life have been like if I grew up in a society that didn't value, you know, this fast paced way of living? Like, what if I grew up in a society where like slow living was the norm and people had peace and people's mental health was like, you know, prioritized and, you know, people's time was prioritized, like having time over like spending every second of your day, like trying to work and get to the next level. Like, what if I grew up in a society that wasn't so fast paced like American society? I would have a completely different definition of success. And it just completely reframed the way I looked at life. And I learned to just find joy in the simple things. And like, if I never make it another step in my career, I'll be absolutely fine with that. Like, I am just so happy with where I'm at. I love my family. I love all the things that I've accomplished so far. And I am good with that. Like, if I never accomplish another, like, quote unquote, big thing, I'm cool with that. I'm happy with where I am.
Wow. I love it. I mean, I feel like I'm in that stage of life too, where the grind feels uh-huh. hard.
It is.
But yeah, I was pretty much born with the genetics of achievement. So
yeah. It's like, are you a Capricorn?
It's also I'm a Leo.
Are you a Leo? Like my dad.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But you know, it's also conditioned in us, right? Because we learned that that's how we can get validation is by achieving and by getting that next thing. And, you know, for some people it's money, for some people it's diplomas and, you know, career success or whatever. So we do have to work hard sometimes to recondition and decondition ourselves from that. So yeah, I love that message. Well, speaking of goals and dreams, you kind of talked about, you know, being good with where you're at, but is there a goal or dream that has evaded you or something that you have left on your bucket list that you'd want to share with us? Because I love hearing about these things.
I was just talking to my husband about this. I have just been getting these, like, I can't explain it. Like, I just, you know how like when I was telling you about my journey to being vegan and you were saying like, this was like fate. Like, you just kept getting these little moments. Stuff like that happens to me all the time where I start getting these little signs here and there of like maybe what I need to be working towards. And I keep getting these weird, not only say weird, these beautiful signs that have to deal with. So I used to be a travel influencer, right? But these signs of like kind of almost going back to that, but not as a travel influencer, but by providing travel experiences for my kids, like even like one thing that I'm just like, I have like a desire, a longing for. I made a comment earlier about the new American dream is to leave America. I really want to just like world school my kids, like take them around the world, you know, and teach them, provide them with an like alternative, like educational route. That's a very challenging thing to do when you grow up in a place like the United States where like you have just, you're just so used to what you did growing up. Like, I went to a school, I did the traditional route of going through like the school system. So the idea of like taking my kids around the world and educating them, you know, abroad, it's a very outside of my comfort zone. But just like having to learn how to raise a vegan kid, I dove into it head first. I did all the research. And I know that like with anything that you really want to do, you can absolutely find a community for it. You can do all the research for it and you can figure it out so that you can get to that place of feeling confident in it. So I'm kind of at the, like the beginning stages of like looking into it. Ultimately, I would love to like move to another country and raise my kids in another country where parents are more supported where the education system is a lot better. That's my ultimate dream. But right now I'm actually just like kind of playing with the idea of maybe just like a month every year, taking my kids abroad and providing them with an educational experience, in another country. And I just know that like what travel did for me in my 20s, it just enriched me in ways that I cannot even explain. And I want to kind of provide that with my kids too. Like I want them to know that like America is not the end all be all. Our ways of doing things are not, you know, necessarily the best as oftentimes we grow up thinking and being conditioned into thinking. I want them to know that there's a whole other world out there. There are a whole other like educational methods out there that can enrich their lives and open them up to a whole other new perspectives that they wouldn't get necessarily, you know, from only being educated here in America. So I want to give that to them. So I've been playing around with that idea. There's somebody that I follow. Her name is Kara Celeste West. And she is like my biggest motivation because she is vegan. She's a vegan mom. And she's currently world schooling right now. And it started with her just being so tired of like all the gun violence in America. And she was so scared, you know, just like this place of fear. Like it's a very scary place when you think about raising kids here in the United States, given that, you know, gun violence is the leading cause of kids here in America. That's a very scary statistic, you know, given the fact that a lot of other countries don't deal with this. So it started with that. And she ended up getting an opportunity and it just snowballed. And she ended up selling all her stuff, her and her husband, and they have been traveling ever since. And it has just been the coolest thing to witness them do. And I'm not going to lie, it's giving me that itch to try to do something similar with my kids. I can't do the same level as her, right? Because like my husband has a job that, you know, wouldn't be feasible for us to do that. But I have been playing with the idea of at least doing maybe like a 1 month out of the year type of thing and trying to see what I can make work for us.
Well, it's definitely a soul urge. I can see that coming from the bottom of your soul. And, you know, everything is figure outable.
Yeah.
So you just have to ask, not can I do this, but how?
Yes.
How can I do this?
Exactly.
And let your brain work on it and your brain will figure it out.
Yeah.
But the other thing you were talking about made me think about something that I've said before, in that once you change to a vegan diet, because it seems so radical, like now we don't see it as radical, right? But because we do something that's so different from everybody else, we're such a small percentage of the population that's doing this. It seems so radical. It's easier to make other radical changes.
Yeah.
It's almost comfortable. Like, hey, I did this and not only did nothing bad happen, but it actually expanded my life. What are other things that seem like I'm stuck in that I have to do that aren't that way?
Yeah.
So for us, it's also been like our minimalism journey and actually going like downsizing, which most people are always going up and getting bigger houses. So we downsized and raised our kids with also this whole understanding of minimalism and not over consuming. We're definitely beyond, you know, we're not perfect at all. Okay. So we're not, but you know, just once you do one of those things, your mind opens up and it's doing other things like that doesn't seem that scary or risky. It seems more exciting and possible.
Yeah.
So your brain's already practiced it. Oh, you know, it's already practiced doing those things. So
wonderful point.
Cool.
Yeah.
I love how excited you are and I can't wait to see you do that. So super exciting.
Thank you.
What does it mean to be human?
I think people have this warped definition of being human. And I saw a lot of that while watching Christspiracy. And it goes back to this conversation that I had with a friend of mine who was like justifying eating animals because she felt like God told us to, you know, and using the Bible to justify it. It's like, oh, he gave us dominion over the earth. And I just really want to just like ask people who, you know, approach it that way. What if you're thinking about the word dominion in the wrong way? What if by, you know, with us as being human, we think that having dominion over the earth means conquering and dominating? What if it actually means that we're supposed to be protecting the earth? Like having dominion over the earth means we have a responsibility to care for and protect all life on earth, to protect the earth itself, as well as all of the animals on it, all of the creatures, to protect each other, to protect the most vulnerable. I feel like ultimately that is what being human is. To be human is to be a protector of the earth. And I really, really, really want to see people like embrace that and own that and kind of stop looking at ourselves, you know, from an individualistic stance on life. Like, I just feel like we're in this weird place right now where a lot of people are just for themselves, but like recognize that to be human, like, what is the point? What is our purpose on earth if we are only for ourselves? Like, to be human is to care about all life on earth and to do whatever we can to uplift everyone so that we are all living the best life that we can live. That is what it means to be human.
Oh, wow. Amazing. You're just like spewing knowledge and wisdom all over the place. So this has been an amazing conversation,
Thank
Ashley.
You.
I feel like we could talk for hours, hopefully someday.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in the States, we can get together. Or no, let's just say this. One of my favorite places that I've been to, I haven't been like to the majority of the world, but I've been to a few places. The Greek islands. Amazing. All right. Like literally, I told my husband, I was like, can we just move here? Like I didn't want to leave. The pace, it's so beautiful. Plus it's beautiful. The food is amazing. The vegetables taste like they've been enhanced. And definitely let's meet there.
Okay.
So whenever you do your month-long Greek island, just let me know. I'm meeting you there.
Well, like I said, signs, that was a sign because Greece was one of the places that I was considering. So maybe that's the universe telling me, go to Greece.
Yeah. Just give me advance notice so I can meet you there.
I will do that. I will absolutely do that.
You're going to love it. You're going to love it so much. It's an amazing place and a great place to have kids visit too. So, okay. So where can listeners connect with you? Where can they buy your book? Do you have any other products or services you offer? Give us all the deets.
Gosh, I'm so horrible at selling myself. Like literally this, like so many people have told me like, come out with courses, come out with this. I'm just like, no, I just really want to write a book, you know, so that people have the resource. And then like, that's that. So the book is like the main thing, The Vegan Baby Cookbook and Guide. It is available everywhere online where books are sold. Yes, that is it. So you can get it on Amazon, Target.com, you know, Walmart.com, Barnes and Noble, like everywhere worldwide. Like I said, everywhere that books are sold online. And like, that is the biggest thing. That book is just like near and dear to my heart. I put so much work into it and I did it all while pregnant. Like fun fact, I literally, when I started writing it, I was newly pregnant. And then literally right when I finished a manuscript, I emailed my publisher. I said, I'm done. I just need to review it. I went into labor within the hour. So my baby was with me from start to literal finish. It was like he was waiting for me to be done so that he could enter the world. And it was just,
oh my goodness.
It's so special to me. This book is so special to me. So yes, please, if you are looking for these resources, please get the book. If you know other people who could use this as a resource, please get them the book, gift the book to them. And other than that, you can find me online. I post so much, you know, inspirational videos, informative videos on my social media, mostly on Instagram. Hey Ashley Renee. That's HeyAshleyRenee. I'm also trying to do better on TikTok. I started out on YouTube, but I haven't really done, you know, YouTube in a while, but I'm uploading all my videos from Instagram into YouTube Shorts. But yeah, main platform is Instagram. And then of course my book, if you want to do a deep dive into all the information.
Oh my goodness. Ashley, thank you for everything that you've done. Thank you for sharing yourself on this episode today. It's been such a pleasure getting to know you and being inspired by you. And I just can't wait to see you continue on your journey and can't wait to meet up in Greece. It's going to be so fun.
Let's do it.
And keep up the great work. And I hope that you have a very plantastic day.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been an honor. My name is Ashley Renee Nsanwu and I am human.
Thank you for listening to another episode of I Am Human. I would be so honored if you subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss an episode. We love our listeners and take your feedback seriously. If you have questions or constructive feedback, you can email us at podcast@dryami.com. That's podcast@dryami.com. I am your host, Dr. Yami Cazorla Lancaster. I Am Human is produced by myself and Alejandra Parra. Graphics designed by Alejandra Parra. Music by Angela Sof with Glowbox Productions and edited by the Castos production team. Remember, human, you are here for a reason. Have fun, explore, and live your life to the fullest.
Why pay more for a separate CoQ10 supplement? Enjoy twice the benefits with SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced, from the number one doctor, pharmacist, and cardiologist recommended beet brand for heart health support. The new SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced by Human is now infused with CoQ10. That's essentially like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 ingredients support nitric oxide production, healthy blood pressure, healthy CoQ10 levels, and heart-healthy energy with two tasty chews a day. Plus, SuperBeats Heart Chews Advance are plant-based, so you get heart-healthy energy without stimulants. For a limited time, get a free 30-day supply of SuperBeats Heart Chews on all bundles and 15% off your first order by going to radiobeats.com and using promo code DEAL. That's radiobeats.com, code DEAL.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.